all the education in the world. All the education in the world. I appreciate education. You might not be able to tell it from talking with me. I value it. Learning of all forms, formally and also informally. We're all learners. So that's my list. A 9-0 record, $1 billion, we'll say, and all the education in the world. What do those things have in common? I'll tell you. Jesus doesn't marvel at any of them. Jesus does not marvel at any of them. Open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 8. I want to show you something here. Matthew chapter 8, verse 10 tells us, when Jesus heard this, he marveled. The word is thaumazo, and it's a word that is most frequently used to describe the reaction of someone who had just seen a miracle. It plays another part in Matthew chapter 8. In fact, if you dart your eyes to verse number 27, Matthew chapter 8, verse 27, you will see that the men marveled, saying, who can this be? Even the winds and the sea obey him. So after these followers of Jesus witnessed his calming of the sea, they thaumazo, they marveled. And back to our verse 10, Matthew chapter 8, verse 10. Jesus marvels when he hears this. There are three and a half times in our New Testaments where the Bible lets us know that Jesus marveled. Jesus had this reaction. And I want to talk to you about them this morning. The first one's right here, Matthew chapter 8. The climax is verse number 10. Of course, we want to back up and be led to this point where we find Jesus here marveling at what he's hearing. So let's begin in verse number 1, Matthew chapter 8, verse 1. Jesus had come down from the mountain. Great multitudes follow him. We'll spot read these verses for the sake of brevity. A leper comes and worships Jesus, verse 2, and requesting of him to make him clean. So this leper wanted to be made whole. Jesus reaches forth his hand, touching him, that's very notable, and says, Matthew chapter 8, verse 3, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately, that's a big one there, immediately this healing took place. A real miracle is being done by Jesus. Somebody getting better over time through close consultation of doctors and taking medicine, that sort of thing is normal. That's what the body's designed to do. The body's designed to fight off diseases and to get better. It doesn't always work because these bodies of ours aren't made to be permanent. But immediately this man's leprosy was cleansed. A miracle had taken place. Matthew chapter 8, verse 4, Jesus instructs this now cleansed individual, you go, don't tell anybody what's going on here, but you conform to the Mosaic commandments, offer the gift that is required from such, but don't tell anyone. That may seem a bit strange to our hearing. Why wouldn't Jesus want people to know? Well, Jesus knew that his ability to do these miracles and heal diseases would at some point in his ministry kind of overtake the freedom that he wanted to be able to travel about so that he could teach the gospel. Because Jesus, after all, wasn't here to heal diseases, to feed the hungry, to cure the sick. That's not why Jesus came. He did those things. Don't get me wrong. We both know in our Bibles there are countless examples of Jesus feeding the hungry, healing the sick, curing the blind, taking care of people's physical problems. But that wasn't his primary mission. His primary mission, as we committed to memorize a sermon or two ago in Luke chapter 19, verse 10, is to seek and to save the lost. And so at some point, there would be conflict. There would be conflict in the people's knowledge that Jesus could do these other things and Jesus' mission to preach the gospel so that people could hear. His ability to do these miracles would almost become a distraction. from his main thrust of preaching the gospel. And so here at this juncture in his ministry, Jesus instructs this leper who's clean now not to go and tell anybody about it. And then the scene kind of shifts, Matthew chapter 8, verse 8, as Jesus is confronted by a centurion, we learn in verse 5, who comes to Jesus and says, "I have a servant who is at home, dreadfully tormented." The New King James Version says, this centurion man, he has someone dear to him who is sick. Jesus announces, verse number 7, Matthew chapter 8, verse 7, "I will come and heal him." The centurion answers and says, "No, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof." I'm a guy who really doesn't like to inconvenience people. If there's something that's supposed to be going on, I don't like to inconvenience folks. So sometimes if you don't want to inconvenience people, you end up doing a little bit more of the running around. You know, I don't want to inconvenience you to bring something up here to the building, so I'll come to your house and then go to that person's house. And then I think maybe guys are like that. I don't know. I know a lot of people who don't mind asking for everything, you know. So maybe not all guys are like that. But I am. I don't like to inconvenience folks. And I wonder if this centurion had a bit of that going on in his mind. Here he's come to meet the Lord with news of a dreadfully sick loved one of his, servant, but someone for whom he cares a lot about. And Jesus says, "I will come and I will heal him." And this man says, don't go to all that trouble. Don't go to all that trouble. And he also humbly says, "I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of all of this. But speak the word only. Your words are powerful, Lord. Speak the word only, and he will be healed." And this man goes on to explain how he understands this principle of authority in words. And it's a beautiful tale. And when Jesus hears it, when he processes all of this request, the Bible says that he marvels, Matthew chapter 8, verse 10. He marvels because, well, in Jesus' own words, he says, Matthew chapter 8, verse 10, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel, among those who should have deep, strong faith." Jesus says this man here stands in a class of his own because he believes in the power of the Lord's word. And Jesus sees this faith, and he has the same reaction that the disciples of his later have when they see Jesus calming the sea. He marvels. The things that impress Jesus ought to impress us. Let me say that again. The things that impress Jesus ought to impress us. And, of course, the flip side of that coin is the things that don't impress Jesus should not impress us. We have it all backwards in this world, where the things that don't matter are the things that everybody's going to be talking about tomorrow. The weather, how the sport teams do, how much money do you have, whose video on YouTube has gone viral. All these things don't matter. But test it out. See what people are talking about tomorrow. All these things that don't matter. Meanwhile, the things that do matter, how you're worshiping the Lord, how you're following His word, how your prayer life is, how your soul is, these are the things that nobody will be talking about. I mean, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Augusta Road Church of Christ, and you can find us talking about that. You can go to our webpage on the internet, www.augustaroadcoc.org. You can go to our webpage and find that and hear sermons like this and read articles where we're talking about it. But beyond that, you just take your own informal poll tomorrow. Those are all the rage now. Take your own informal poll and just see who's talking about what. And all the things that don't matter are going to be the things that people are talking about. And meanwhile, how somebody's faith is, how somebody's soul is, these things are all going to be put off for later. Jesus finds a man here who has truly incredible faith. He believes in the power of Jesus, and he believes that the sovereign Son of God has such authority that he's able just to speak the words, and all of the world, the elements, the diseases, the bodies, they'll all obey Jesus' words because they are that powerful. Jesus sees that, and he's impressed big time. This is number one. Number two comes in Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6 is where we find Jesus yet again marveling. Flip over there and we'll notice it together. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus goes into the synagogue to teach on the Sabbath day. This was customary for him. He wanted, of course, to reach the audience of the Jews. And on the Sabbath day assembly, these Jews, for better or for worse, they were at the synagogue worship service. And so Jesus was there teaching many things. And those who heard Jesus, Mark chapter 6, verse 2 says, they were astonished. They were astonished at Jesus, and they said, where did this man get these things? How did he get so smart? Where did he get this wisdom, and how can he do these mighty works? No doubt a reference to the miracles that Jesus was doing. News spread of the miraculous ability of Jesus. Jesus wanted to kind of keep this under wraps for a while so that it would not conflict with his true ministerial aims. But you can't contain. The world could not hush Jesus' miraculous ability. And so it's spread around. And these people hear Jesus and they're amazed. They see Jesus' works and they're amazed. But it's not computing in their minds. It's not, something's not making sense. Because they ask, is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary? Verse 3, Mark chapter 6, verse 3. What's so special about Jesus? He's just that carpenter, the son of Mary. There's nothing special about his pedigree, not that we can tell. He's the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon. You have a couple of writers of the New Testament there, I believe. So here's Jesus being judged by his background. And the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the religious elite, this upper crust crowd, they seem dismissive of what their eyes see. And they seem only to look at his pedigree and his qualifications. And to their minds, Jesus doesn't have enough there in the area of qualifications or pedigree or any outstanding accomplishments. To their eyes, he's just a guy, just a regular guy, a carpenter. The son of Mary. We know his family. There's nothing remarkable about them. And Jesus is privy to all this that's going on. And Mark chapter 6, verse 6, notice his reaction. He marvels. He marvels. He marvels this time at their unbelief. This is the opposite of the spectrum from Matthew chapter 8. Where Jesus is impressed and amazed at a man's belief in him. Here, Jesus is amazed and he's stricken by their unbelief because, after all, they see with their own eyes what Jesus is capable of doing. They hear with their own ears how eloquent, how masterful he is. Jesus wasn't just a good talker. He was, of course, a good talker. But Jesus made connections from the law of Moses that had eluded their minds all this time. And now Jesus is there as literally a gift from heaven, showing them the Old Testament in real life. And they see this and they hear it. And not only do they see and they hear his message, but they see his miracles and they say, nah, no. Don't believe your lying eyes. There's nothing special about Jesus. Just a regular person. Normal, ordinary. He's remarkably unremarkable. There's his mom over there. There's his family over there. He's a carpenter, for crying out loud. There's nothing special about Jesus. They had to work hard. I don't know. I say they had to work hard. Maybe they didn't have to work hard, depending on how bad the bias was against Jesus. It would seem they would have to work hard to come to that conclusion. They would have to deny the obvious. That's exactly what they did. They deny the obvious here, and that's what strikes Jesus. That's what astonishes him. That they have the best. Heaven's best is right there in front of them, and they're choosing to turn a cold shoulder to Jesus and not listen to him. You know, here's an example of a group of people, smart people too. I mean, objectively, they're smart, I suppose. And they're hearing Jesus. It's all making sense. You know, it's all making sense. And they're seeing his miracles, and those don't make sense. But that's the whole point. Jesus is doing things that nobody else can do or explain, and that should be the solid proof that he's from God. But these people say, no, just keep on moving. There's nothing astonishing or remarkable about him. Nothing to see here. Just move along. And Jesus witnesses that, and it doesn't compute. He marvels at it. What in the world is going on here? What has to live in the minds and the hearts of people to see these things, to hear these things, to witness this, and then take a pass on Jesus? You know, there are a lot of people today who say, my faith would be so strong. You've heard people like this, I'm sure, who bemoan their weak faith, and they claim that their faith would be so strong if what? Well, if I could just see a miracle. We know that the age of miracles has ceased. And so there are people today who talk about how much more they would come to church service if they could just see a miracle, how much more they would believe in Jesus if they could just see the man and touch him and hear him speak and see him in action. My faith would be so strong, they say. Well, I say that's another deflection. I'm not so sure that their faith would be any stronger. Because here are some people who saw Jesus in action, and their faith was not strong, not at all. In fact, they didn't have any faith. They saw Jesus. They saw the miracles. And they said no thank you to all of it. All of it. No thank you. We'll go somewhere else looking for our religious guidance and direction. Here are people who made that very decision. So, the next time you're trying to make yourself feel better because your faith isn't maybe as strong as you know it needs to be deep down inside, don't try this one, because this one won't work. There are people who saw Jesus and rejected him. In fact, most of the people who saw, more people who saw Jesus rejected them than accepted him. Because they were not honest. It's a matter of honesty. And when Jesus looked at these people looking at him, when Jesus heard what they said about him, it shocked him. He marveled. He had this incredible reaction because of their unbelief. The next one comes in Luke chapter 7. Open your Bibles, please, to Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7 will sound an awful lot like Matthew chapter 8 because it's Luke's telling of the same account. There are some things that we might note that are slightly different along the way. Jesus goes to Capernaum. That's where he was in Matthew chapter 8. Again, I'll remind you that Luke chapter 7, Matthew chapter 8 are parallel. They talk about the same sequence of frames in Jesus' life. Jesus is at Capernaum. There is a centurion servant who was dear to him. Remember, we ascertained that from Matthew chapter 8. He was sick and ready to die, the servant was. And so the centurion hears about Jesus. He sends people to go and talk with Jesus. Presumably, he wanted to stay by the side of his beloved friend. So this account lets us know that he sends an envoy. He sends people to meet Jesus. And he asks these elders to ask Jesus to heal his friend. Jesus is aware of this. They meet, the two parties meet, Jesus and this band of elders sent by the centurion, Luke chapter 7, verse 6. And Jesus is on his way to the centurion's house, where Matthew picks up and tells us that the centurion goes to meet Jesus. This was later in the sequence. First, there was this envoy sent, and as Jesus is approaching the centurion's home, the centurion goes and meets him and says, "Do not trouble yourself." Luke chapter 7, verse 6. Don't trouble yourself. Also, I'm not worthy for you to come into my house. I want you, please, to speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. And Matthew tells us this too, but we skipped over it when we looked at chapter 8 because we wanted to make mention of it here in Luke chapter 7. Look at Luke chapter 7, verse 8. I'm a man placed under authority. Here's the centurion speaking. He is by trade, by profession. He's a fellow who's over a large assemblage of soldiers. He's a man placed under great authority, he mentions, having soldiers under me. I say to one, go, and he goes. To another, come, and he comes. I say to a servant, do this, and he does it. So this man understands the authority of a commandment because he is similarly positioned in a place of authority where he tells someone, you do this, and it gets happened. You go, and he goes. You come, and he comes. Go take care of this job, and it's taken care of. So this man says to Jesus, you can do that. I can do it. I'm just a soldier. You can do it on a material level. You can do, Jesus, you can command things that not even a centurion can command. You can command diseases. You can command the elements. You can command bodies. So just speak the word. Speak the word, and I trust that my servant will be healed. Jesus hears this, and he marvels. Luke chapter 7, verse 9 says, he turns around to the crowd that followed him. How about this for a scene? Here's a newbie coming to Jesus, a centurion. And Jesus has a crowd following him. And Jesus turns to the church who are following him. And he says, I haven't seen faith this exquisite anywhere. Jesus' followers here learn a lesson about faith. We're followers of Jesus today. Are we learning the same lesson about faith? There's power, there's authority in Jesus' word, and it's a beautiful thing. Let me show you another one, John chapter 7. I mentioned at the beginning of this sermon there are 3.5 or 4 instances in the New Testament where Jesus marvels. Here's that half of one, I think. John chapter 7, verses 21 and following. Jesus is in conversation with his followers whose faith needed some shoring up. And Jesus says, "I did one work and you all marveled." What's going on here? I do one miracle and you marvel. Jesus is expressing surprise in their surprise. So we count it as kind of a half of an event. The people see Jesus in action and they're amazed. We mentioned at the top of the sermon, this is a frequent response from people who see Jesus. And Jesus sees their witness of him. Jesus takes account of how they are amazed at the thing that he did. And Jesus talks to them about Moses, who did so many things that these Jews should be loyal followers of Moses, so loyal that they see Jesus as a fulfillment of Moses' teachings, in fact. So Jesus is shocked that they're shocked. Jesus marvels at their marvel. And Jesus says, we'll mention this in conclusion, don't judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. John chapter 7, verse 24. You see, the Jews were getting it all wrong. The Jews were getting it all wrong. They were in their own way. And Jesus here is trying to help them resolve that matter. You are amazed at what Jesus does? That's great. But Jesus is surprised at their surprise because it should be so evident that he's from God. Which is why Jesus tells them in John chapter 7, verse 24, you judge righteously. Look at this. And you'll come to this conclusion that Jesus Christ is God's Son and man's only hope. Don't be surprised when your mind tells you that. They were surprised when their mind connected those dots, and Jesus was surprised at their surprise. But before, as I was coming in this morning, before Bible class, which, by the way, we offer for you and your families, please come and be a part of our Bible classes. Before Bible class this morning, someone said, "You know, it's your job to tell us who to vote for." And I said, "What? You know, I didn't know that." And he said, "Yeah, man, it's your job to tell us who to vote for." And I thought, I don't know if I want to do that. And then I thought, sure, I'll do that. You know, I'll tell you exactly who to vote for. There are only two real ones to pick from. You know, we all know that. And so you should vote definitely for Jesus. The only option we have outside of Jesus is the devil. You know, you either vote for the devil or you vote for Jesus. And so you absolutely need to vote for Jesus. Every day, right? Every day. I know what's going to happen in this world. Sometimes I get up here and I say, I don't know what's going to happen. Well, I do know what's going to happen today. I know that this world and everything in it's going to be destroyed. Sooner or later, regardless of which political party is pulling the strings or calling the shots or signing the bills or passing the legislation, sooner or later, this country and this world will be destroyed. And that's why we need to vote for Jesus. Because when this world is destroyed, it's not going to be here for us anymore. not going to be our home anymore. It's not going to be our safe space anymore. When this world is destroyed, it will just be us and the Lord, and whatever relationship we've put there. So I want you to make sure that you're putting in a good relationship with Him. Your faith is strong, it's robust, it's active, it's producing in your lives. That's what Jesus wants. And one of these days, how you've done that will be the only thing that matters. I don't know when that's coming. I don't know when the world's going to be destroyed. But it will be. And then what? Your soul will go somewhere. And we want your soul to go to heaven. We want that very, very badly, in fact. So does the Lord. And He's the only one who can take your soul to heaven. So absolutely make sure that you vote for Him, because He's our only hope. He's man's only Savior. This morning, you can make sure that He will save your soul by obeying His plan of salvation, hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. We can have faith that impresses Jesus, and we should strive for that. And this morning, if you're ready to be baptized, we're so ready to baptize you. If you're not a member of the Lord's church, that's what you must do in order to be saved. And if you are a member of the Lord's church, that's fantastic. We learn from these vignettes in Jesus' life that we've just seen that this faith is vitally important in our relationship to Him. Make sure yours is strong. Make sure it's active. Make sure you're serving the Lord and pleasing Him. And if we can help you in that area of your life, let us know how. While we stand and while we sing, won't you come, please?
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.